Very much, ladies and gentlemen. We'll now go on to the next speaker, Professor Kofi Kwashika, who is the Dean of the Faculty of Law in the University of Ghana. Professor Kwashika. Let's give him a chair.
Thank you. Good morning. I see this platform as an opportunity for me to reiterate what I've continued to write and say as far as the role of the state in religious matters is concerned. In other words, to what extent should we permit our states to have a say in matters that concern our religions? Others were argued that as much as possible, and particularly in Africa, taking into account the nature of our nations, that the state should keep off from religious matters. My position is strengthened the more as I examine the various conflicts in Africa, and then look at the role, the hand of religion in all this. These conflicts might have been started based on some other causes, but when you study them deeply, you cannot but leave out the influence of religion. Talk of Egypt, talk of Kenya, talk of Nigeria, the Central African Republic, you can name them. Religion eventually comes up. And when you look at our various constitutions, you find most of the times the provision that the state shall have, in many cases, nothing to do with religion. But is that the case? That is why I've decided to look at the topic, state-sanctioned religious discriminations in Africa, the nature, the implications, and the consequences. The role of religion in Africa cannot be ignored. The impact of religion on the nations of Africa, on our peace, tranquility, cannot be taken for granted. This is more so when we look at the nature of our states. At best, they can be described as patchworks. Patchworks made up of various different groups put together at a point in history to become the various countries we have today. And this is compounded with the fact of the introduction of the introduced religions, particularly Islam and Christianity. Now, the religion appeals to the very deep parts of us, of the individual. It is often not a matter of reason, but one of faith. That is sheer faith. And that is what makes it open to exploitation for political gains. And the danger of the exploitation of religion for political gain is very real in Africa, particularly following from the fact that our political parties are more clientele in nature than being based on policy basis. If you study how our political parties operate in Africa, you will hardly find anything in them to do with policy. It's just a matter of clientelism. And when religion comes in, it becomes a very difficult matter to handle. This has been discovered. This has been discovered in many countries. If I may take my own country, Ghana, for instance, this was clear even at the point of independence. That is the influence of religion in the political matters. And for that reason, immediately upon independence, the Anti-Discrimination Act was passed. That prohibited any discrimination on the basis of religion, sex, that's gender or any other reason. And in addition, our various constitutions, that is the various constitutions of Ghana, have prohibited the formation of political parties based on religion. If you form a political party that is based on a particular religion, it will not be registered. Also, you cannot have a law made by parliament to prescribe a particular religion for the country. Irrespective of this, and I dare say that the same is for many other countries, the question still remains, in practice, do we not import into our national affairs the influence of religion? And what has been the consequence of all this? It is for this reason that I see this opportunity as very important for us to consider this influence of religion in our national affairs, particularly taking into account the fact that many of our constitutions do seek to exclude religion from our national affairs. But in practice, how very effective is that done? Now, there are three, I believe, or more possibilities of religious discrimination that you can find. The first one is what I've alluded to already, where a constitution may expressly recognize one particular religion as a state religion. The second may be where the constitution or the laws of the nation purport to be irreligious, but then at the same time grant certain privileges to some religious groups, not necessarily because of the particular faith that they prefer, but just simply because they constitute very significant civil society, if you may use that word, groups in the country. The third one could be policies of the government that are just intended to facilitate or to assist citizens of the country, but who, because of their particular religious beliefs, need assistance. And this may, perhaps unwittingly, land the government in the throes of religious conflict. If I may take the first one, that is where the constitution of the country specifically promotes or recognizes one particular religion as the state religion. A good example is on the part of the Islamic religion is Mauritanian, which provides expressly that Islam is a state religion, but recognizes other religions. However, you can only become a president of the country if you are a Muslim. So that is clear. The second one is Zambia, where the preamble of the constitution declares the nation as a Christian state. But that is where it stopped. It didn't go further in the body of the constitution itself to confer any additional privileges on the Christian religion. In many other constitutions of Africa, you find the express attempt made to declare the state as secular. Now, in even those states that are declared as secular, you can often find the hand of religion in many of the affairs of the state. If you take a state like, a country like Nigeria, which of course constitutionally is secular, but at the same time, the constitution makes provision for Sharia. And because the constitution makes provision for Sharia, you have a situation where a section of the citizens decided to have Sharia in their states, particularly the northern states. And the consequence is what we have now, a situation where an extremist group riding on the back of that provision in the constitution permitting Sharia would want to take it to the extreme, what we have as a Boko Haram. Indeed, the earlier action of Nigeria in joining the OIC also gave room to many in the country, particularly the Christians, to regard the activities or the actions of the government as a sellout as far as the Christians were concerned. Indeed, Williams, writing in 1991, wrote that the joining of the OIC by the government of Nigeria was almost equivalent to, as far as many Christians saw it then, as a declaration of war. And the fallouts, according to some, are what we are seeing today. In the case of Egypt, though Egypt specifically declares Islam as a state religion, you could see the problems that Morsi brought on himself when the 2012 constitution went further to proclaim that the jurisprudence of Egypt, the laws of evidence and others, shall be in accordance with the Sunni practice. And that, of course, we all know what followed. Even liberal Muslims opposed to it, because to them, the next stage would be the institutionalization of the various harsh criminal aspects of the Sharia, which they were not prepared to take on. Then in the case of Kenya, in other words, peaceful Kenya, we cannot fail but to read the influence of religion and the violence that is beginning to escalate. In the case of Central African Republic, the attempt is made to blame the insurgents on economic provisions. But of course, it took a group mainly identified as belonging to a particular religious group to invade the country, and in retaliation, the Christian group also marched up, and now we have something that might have started as a reaction to economic determinants being transformed into religious. And as I said, when religion gets into this kind of conflicts, it becomes very difficult to resolve because it is a matter of faith. And that is why I've always argued that as much as possible, we should try, at least in Africa, to keep religion out of our affairs. And the conflict in the La Côte d'Ivoire also has the influence of religion. The north, mainly Islamic, the south, mainly Christian. So we cannot ignore the hand of religion in these matters. The second basis for discrimination, as I mentioned, could be government actions that would be considered discriminatory. Actions that may otherwise look innocent. In the case of my home country, Ghana, which is considered relatively peaceful, that is, in regard to the surrounding the countries in the region, the government decided recently to assist Muslims to undertake the pilgrimage to Mecca. Initially, it was left to the state, to the Muslim groups to organize. But every year, it is botched up. The organization is never properly done. So the government decided to step in. Not necessarily funding the trips, but facilitating as much as possible the trips. And indeed, with the government coming in, the pilgrimages became much more smooth. But then, the Christians thought government should not get involved in those matters. Because whichever way you look at it, even if government doesn't put in money, at least it is state time, state personnel that are being used to facilitate the exercise. The consequence was an outburst from the Muslim community, and it generated into a war of words. And the government, in order to please the Christians, decided to organize a pilgrimage to Jerusalem. Now the question was, who goes? And unfortunately, I may say, the Christian leaders opted out because they were not happy when government decided to do it for the Muslims, and now government wants to do it for the Christians. So the actions of governments that may appear innocent could play into the hands of all the religious fanatics. Now, the third one, after, as I mentioned, could be where by law or by the constitution, the country recognizes particular groups, including religious groups, as I said, not because of the particular faith they profess, but just because they are an organized group. Again, if I may use the Constitution of Ghana, the Constitution recognizes certain religious groups, like the Christian Council of Ghana, made up of the Orthodox churches and the Charismatic churches, the Islamic groups. And these groups have been constitutionally given seats on some constitutional bodies, like the Media Commission, which is a constitutional body. The traditionalists were left out. The other smaller religions were also left out. Now the question is, why leave out this and include those others? Now the consequence of this is that that recognition gives some kind of superiority, some idea of superiority over the others. Now this manifested itself in the fact that when we have national programs, public programs, the major religions are invited to offer prayers, Muslims, Christians, and traditionally, the traditional leaders of the area where the function is taking place are also permitted to offer their prayers. It used to be in this order. The traditional priest offers the prayer, followed by either the Christian priest or the Muslim priest, in that order or vice versa. And it used to be fine. Until recently, when the Christians in particular started arguing that they cannot see their bishops standing on the same platform with traditional priests to offer prayers to God for the nation. And unfortunately, at the last Independence Day celebrations, the traditional priest was not invited. And unfortunately, for the first time in the history of the country, there was a very heavy downpour, marrying the whole program. And of course, the interpretation was that we cannot leave us out. This land belongs to us, and we have a say in whatever happens. Now, this may appear to be innocent, ordinary, but the consequence of all this is that when the state, whether expressly or implicitly, gets involved in religious matters, there can become opportunities to be used for political gains. And as I said, the nature of politics in African countries is not one of policy, but one of clientelism. And religion, just like other such groupings, could become very easy opportunities for use by those who intend to have their way. It is for these reasons that, and this is the direction of this paper, to examine the situation in Africa, look at our various pieces of legislation and constitutional provisions that have to do with religion, and see whether it is not better for us in Africa to let religion be. It may be okay for other parts of the world, but we have enough problems already not to add that of religion. As I said, I always see us as academics and religious leaders as having the duty to ensure that our nations, our governments steer clear of the issues of religion. Thank you very much.
Ladies and gentlemen, we will take one good question, the best question. Thank you.
Thank you, Kofi. I don't know if it's a good question, but regarding this downpour, I'm interested in who spoke out on behalf of the traditional religious priests. I mean, was it something that the media picked up on in terms of Ruben, or was there an official statement by some representative of course, very diverse traditional religious groups? In other words, how did they try to make hay out of the situation?
Thank you very much. The traditional religions in Ghana are not as very well organized as are the others, the Christians, particularly the Muslims. So it's difficult to have one unified voice. Nevertheless, you have the media, which is quite vibrant in Ghana, always picking up this. But even before the rain started, it was, when the program was going on, commentaries were going on from the various radio stations. And even before the rain started, this observation was made, that it was clear that they had left out the traditional groups. And you could feel it, you could see it, it was obvious.